What a delight, just absolute delight. As I meet old friends who have come today, many of them share their excitement about the day and their enthusiasm, and it's just the uplift of the day, and that's exactly my own reaction as I looked forward to it. And for lots of reasons, but the Sangha element of that commonality of sharing, of heart space, of just having been together, some of us, as Anna mentioned, decades, is just, there are old friends and then there are old Dharma friends. And you just can't beat the old Dharma friend part of that. There's something that is commonly shared that few other relationships impart. I have a lifelong friend who I stay in touch with, who I've known 65 years, and we talk from time to time. He lives in a different part of the country, but we share a history that immediately allows a kind of commonality of purpose and intention and background and understanding and safety and trust. Well, that all is given in a Dharma relationship almost immediately, because you don't find a lot of immoral people coming to the Dharma. It's just nice to be able to relax within a community such as this. So thank you all for participating in this event. I deeply appreciate all of us coming together. I know there are like 6 or 7 women who flew down from Eugene, and I just want to thank you for coming. Now I have to make it worth your while. Okay, so I want to, this weekend, I have a schedule, but I'm not going to stick with the schedule too much. The last 15 minutes of the day, I'll be available for book signing and a table that will be set up. So I will sign your books if you wish to purchase them. But there's something that I wish to impart to all of you today. Part of it is the communion of just being together and the safety within that, and that's the Sangha element. But there's also a Dharma element, which is very important to me as I grow older. I'm 72, by the way, not 73, Dan. She says she's just optimistic. So, it gets more important with age. I don't know how to, maybe it's always been important. But when you get older, there's something that brings it to the surface. An increasing importance. People say, what are you doing on retirement, for your retirement? Because I've been basically retired for a couple of years. I come back, do one of these a year, or have for the last 2 years. Well, mostly I do less. And for some people, that seems to indicate not as a productive life. You're not being as productive, or you're just resting. No. Doing less is a Dharma way of holding life. For instance, when I was teaching actively, which was several times a week and almost in many, many weekends in the course of a year, there was always a preparation and a need to move on to the next thing, and I didn't realize the momentum that exerted on my life until I didn't have those weekends and days to do. And what I found was that there was a a sense of who I was embedded in the next event, in the productivity of being useful, and of being active, engaged, all of that. So, because exploring that perception of myself has been sort of the essence of my practice for years and years, I said, okay, what is it like if I let go of being purposeful? Do you understand the depth of that? You see, what if I let go of the need to have a purpose? What does life look like from that vantage? And I have found it to be tremendously beneficial, dharmically beneficial. It hasn't been a wasted time. It's not an idle time in the sense of dharma exploration. It's been a very engaging time. But when you're addressing the fundamental qualities of what life is and what we are within that life, those questions have to be confronted. They have to be addressed. They have to be inquired into. Because what is life free of the expectation, the actions, the engagement that we give it throughout our entire existence? What's it look like to a newborn's eyes? Okay, so perhaps you can get a sense of what we're talking about this weekend when we're talking about shifting identities. It's the place where few of us really want to go. What's much more appealing to us is adding to the identity we already have. Sort of like you'd shine your boots, you know, like make this thing a little more presentable, a little friendlier, nicer, kinder, happier. Which all of us go through a transition period when we enter the Dharma in which that is available to us. The methods that we employ can be extremely helpful in lightening our lives and in beautification, self-beautification. And I'm not suggesting that that's wrong at all. In fact, it's helpful because so many of us have such a poor self-image that we can't really explore. We're too busy defending ourselves to really explore ourselves. To explore, you have to have a clear eyes and the willingness and the interest and the curiosity to look. But if we think of ourselves as some loathsome creature, we're not going to look. We're going to protect, defend, blame. All of the defense mechanisms come into use because of the sense of the poor sense of self-concept that we have. So to beautify oneself, to establish a stability level, is essential. And in Dharma, we do that in a few ways. One is that we learn to open our hearts and find hidden resources within ourselves that we never knew were possible. Like I can really be kind and loving, and I'm a much nicer person than I ever thought I was just by observing myself rather than opinionating everything I'm doing. And so now, then, a second component comes in which is essential in Dharma and also part of the process of building oneself up, which is the phase I'm talking about now of Dharma, and that is concentration and samadhi, steadiness of mind. Concentration is an intimate component of that steadying factor. Now, I'm saying this because I'm going to take you pretty far out there this weekend, as some of you know is my tendency. But for I want you to stay within yourself. I want you to, you can listen to me in a couple of ways. You can listen to me actively and engaged and moving right along with me, which some of you are capable of doing. Others do not have the background to be able to do that, so you can listen with discouraged and, oh, I'll never be able to understand or go where he's going, or all that, which is the wrong way to look. You can listen, even though you may not be able to engage fully what I'm talking about, you can listen from interest and curiosity and mystery. My God, if this life doesn't contain anything else, it contains mystery everywhere. The universe is an exploration. It's a mystery. And so when we invite Dharma in, we invite access to that mystery. The counterpoint is that we try to stay protected from that which we don't understand, and we build our knowledge base so that we know exactly what we're doing, why we're doing it, where we're going. But mystery eliminates that boundary. It eliminates that, it adds to uncertainty. It doesn't add to knowledge. But that's where curiosity comes from. Well, you can't be curious about something you already know. So opening ourselves to what we don't know is the access door to curiosity and interest, and that's where the Dharma moves. That's where the door opens for all of us. Now, to explore what we don't know takes a degree of stability, because it gets too confusing if we're, you know, it's like, oh my God, I don't know. I love science. I'm not a scientist, but I love science, and I read a lot about it. I know nothing about the math, but I love the philosophy. And for years, quantum mechanics has been I love quantum entanglement. I love these weird aspects of the universe. And I also know a physicist who has a PhD who says that there are only a few physicists that are even interested in the philosophy. They only care about the math and how the math projects what the certainty of the problem or the addresses the difficulty, and it does. But they're not interested in the mystery of it all. In fact, at one point, many decades ago, people who offered the philosophy behind it were often not the professor. They were sometimes asked by the higher ups to stick with the math, stick with what's relevant. Don't go there. Well, I want to go there. But in order to go there, all of us need some stability. That's why I want, for those of you who feel confused by what I'm saying, or disoriented, or perhaps even fearful, own your place on the earth. Don't go outside of yourself. Stay right here, grounded. This is where your certainty lies, right here, in body, on the seat, with the earth under your feet. And all of us, from time to time, no matter how far or how deep our Dharma has gone, need the ground under our feet. Because this thing keeps pulling us beyond our range, beyond what we know, beyond our certainty. And for anyone, that can become fearful from time to time. So, okay, let me land. Let me come back in. Let me settle down with this. Let me reorient myself. I'm here. I belong here. This is the right coordinates for my life. Right here. No one's pulling the earth out from under me. I'm forgetting where I stand. So let me come back. Now that, coupled with our meditation practice and concentration, the ability to attend with steady attention. And what that does is that over time, we learn that the attention gets interfered with by our thoughts. Our thoughts keep pulling us away from attention. So we learn through concentration, through application of attention, not to pay as much attention to thinking, and that we can steady ourselves because the ground of our attention is right below the thoughts that try to pull us away. So we learn the difference between those, and that's a very important steadying component for our Dharma life. Now there's another component that grows along with that, and that's the samadhi. Samadhi is not the same as concentration. Samadhi is steadiness of mind, firmness of mind, mental harmony. It's what happens when the effects of our practice are lived. And that is, we're not so tied to the story of ourselves or to everyone else's stories or to blame or to all the ways that we go out beyond ourselves to try to make the world logical and defend it against this poor self-image we have. So all of that over time, called wisdom, but also it has its embodiedness in a steadiness of mind, steadiness of mind. You just don't go off in imagination as much because it doesn't have any relevance. It's not that you have to keep coming back. It's just that you aren't interested in imagination or daydreaming or fantasy. It doesn't take you out there. So what happens when we're less willing to go out is that we come back here. And here will be an important component of the teaching this weekend. So what happens when you find yourself here? You find yourself steady, firmness, sane, not confused, sane. It's right here. What's he saying? Oh, I can't. That's okay. I'm right here. It doesn't matter whether I'm following every word. Here I am. Stay within yourself. Long and short of all of this babble, stay within yourself. Okay? Don't get discouraged. Discouraged means that you're trying to be something it's like a first, just stay within yourself. And you land. And you know life, you look at you. I don't have to go anywhere for the mystery. Why would I have to go? The ground is under my feet. The universe is accessible right now. As I learn to release the tensions of a life that has been defended, which is relaxation. Please understand, no one is going to ask anything other than a deep sense of relaxation. And if relaxation isn't a safe word, how do you get to sleep at night? It's safe for everyone. It's what we rely on to be able to go to sleep, to feel at home, to be embodied. And all the Dharma practice is meant to do is to take us to deeper levels of that very relaxation. Because each time we relax at a deeper level, we have to release the tension that held us beyond that level, or tighter, more contracted, so that we couldn't get to that level. So all we're ever asked to do when we relax is to release the tension of the previous assumptions that kept us contracted. That's the summation of Dharma right there. Now, most of us find that as we relax, we have to release, as I just mentioned. But there comes a point where we don't want to relax anymore. So there's a base level of tension that we hold. Now, why do we do that? We do that because that base level of tension is the ultimate line of boundary for ourselves. And we sense that if we cross that boundary and relax even that last bit, that we won't know ourselves in the way we do now. that we'll lose self-reference. And so we keep a baseline tension that allows us to claim ourselves. And we're also, of course, afraid that if we don't claim ourselves continually, well, the world, we won't be able to navigate the world. It'll all become funny and fuzzy and confused. And all. That's fear. That's not the truth. How could it be the truth when the ground's underneath you? When your samadhi and your focused attention affirm your place moment after moment. You see the paradox in that? Because what the ground is affirming is not your identity, it's your place. You never lose your place. Identity is worth losing. And when I say that, I don't mean forgetting about who you are or becoming confused when somebody says, you know, oh, I used to be this person, but now I'm not supposed to be. It's not like that. It's like you can come back and claim yourself, know your whole history, everything about your storyline, if you wish. But you can also be free of it if you wish. Just by simply releasing the tension to self-reaffirm. Now, this is the essence of Dharma. The essence of Dharma is to shift identities, not build upon the identity we have. All Dharmas that are legitimate and truthful, have that, shifting identities. From the firmness and certainty of my history confirming me and the relevance of my story to my life, even though it's been, for many of us, perhaps most of us, a torturous story, doesn't matter, tortured me. We refuse to let it go. We refuse to see what life is outside of the incrustation that we have imposed upon it. We refuse that. It's like, after a while, we will have crossed over that contracted space of oh, me, I, me, and mine sufficiently where it's like, I don't understand why everybody doesn't do this. I mean, there's nothing to it. There's no harm's way. It's just stillness. You see, what makes already, for those of you who have practiced, your identity is becoming thinner, more translucent. You may not know it. You can still claim yourself, you know all that. Yes, me, I don't know what the me, you know. But when you're doing Dharma practice in a wise direction, your heart's opening. Which means your mind is shrinking. These are big mind, small heart. Big heart, small mind. And I don't mean that in some sort of a negative way. Small mind is less noise from the mind. Not that you don't have the same intellectual power you've always had. But it quiets. So quieter mind, proportional to the openness of heart. And so the quieter the mind, the less relevant the sense of I am is. Diagram that sentence. And we don't really, you know, you get in this, the reason love feels so gratifying and kindness and generosity is because you've shrunk. You're out of the way. When you ever give something, you're giving yourself away with the gift. And so you're shrunk in the moment of generosity. And suddenly you feel this tremendous joy of you getting out of the way of yourself. Now, you can get out of your way of yourself all the time. And a perfect example of that is Narayan. If you come in mid-November, she's one... February. Don't come in mid-November. She exudes joy. I love teaching. She doesn't frame the Dharma the same way I do, but she exudes it. Because her magnanimous heart is her book. So what we're learning, those of us who are drawn to wisdom as opposed to being drawn to love, those are two different paths into the Dharma. You can't get away from wisdom by following the path of love, nor can you get away from love by following the path of wisdom. They're like the double helix of a DNA molecule. But some people are just naturally drawn to more of the clear seeing and the understanding, and some people are just drawn to the open-hearted loving kindness of, and those are both beautiful, but they take you the same place because both of them are weaving their way towards a shifting of identity. And there are moments, that's what awakening means. We're shifting out of ourselves. Now you can perform all the same techniques and all the same strategies from a sense of self-solidification. You can grow more profoundly into your place on earth, but also you're an experienced meditator now and you have all these qualities that you didn't know you had, and you can personify that and it can work against you if you understand the correct way that this thing points. You won't do that. It's nonsense. You see, there are a couple of very important directions, I think, that capture the whole of this. One of them is towards greater quietude. Because from greater quietude, you can't self-promote. And some step towards that greater quietude, you'll cross a crucial boundary in which you'll see that the essence of you and life are the same, and that's stillness. So just keep walking it in proper orientation to where this thing points. Another direction, which I laughed at earlier, but which is profoundly simple but very misunderstood, is the direction towards now. Because when we practice with such complexity, with such, I've got to do this, and now that, how's my heart doing, that you're asking questions that take you out of the present moment, thinking that your way in, that you'll be thinking that you'll be able to come into the present moment when you have gathered all these pieces, and now I can rest here. And believe me, that never happens, because you're never complete enough to really rest at all, because you're too tied in and opinionated about the parts of you that are missing rather than the parts of you, the part, the only part of you that's complete. When I do that, that's for emphasis. You'll forever be chasing the pieces of you that are yet to be fulfilled. Forever. There's no ending to that. Come on, people, I'm 72. I would tell you if there was an ending. Not 73. It's just taking part in the scene. Okay, I've landed, that's it. I'll talk more about this tomorrow because it's so fun. It's so fun to put all of ourselves in now and see what can't stand that and what is in totally embraced within it. So anyway. But I want to mention some of the ways about the true presence, true presence, that keep us reluctant to enter true presence or stillness. They're exactly the same. Presence and stillness are exactly the same, just different perceptions of the same event. One of them is that the way we want it, the mind, if we're mind-centered, that is, if we are operating our dharma from the mind, we want it complex, because that's what the mind does. It makes things complex. It makes things, you know, like nothing. This, something like this, can't be easy. It's too, I mean, how could it be easy? So we figure out formulas and strategies that take us like through every corner of a maze instead of just walking out. So it can't be easy. Yeah, it is easy. So already your mind is quiet. If it's easy, what are you thinking about? If it's easy, what are you plotting? It is easy. You see, we get caught in, I was mentioning concentration, and here's the downside of that, which many people fall into, likely if you focus in on that aspect of meditation without understanding the true nature and direction of the path, you too will slip into the obscured environment of concentration, because it gets more, you take complexity, gets substituted, subtlety gets substituted for complexity, and you start seeing more subtlety. And that's, oh, the mind's never been there before. It's like, oh, wow, look at this, look at, I can see everything coming, it's like, oh, wow. Well, try it and see. If you don't get pulled in. We're talking about microscopic seeing that is something that you have never thought was possible. It's all an internal experience, because it's all a divided experience. It's all separation, because I'm concentrating on. So that can't contain the truth, because it's already divided. And you think more concentration is going to undivide you? So the technique has limitation, that's all. Has limitation. Don't get caught in that. Not if you know your direction. Not if you know where this path is going. You don't want to. You, the less time off of it. Every, never mind. Just know the direction and follow it. So simple, it's simple. Relaxation, there's gotta be more to it than that. Yeah, there's fear. There's relaxation until it takes you to fear, and then I don't wanna relax anymore. That's, are we willing to see that? Because all we have to do is see and relax more, and you're not going to relax unless you see it, so you've gotta see it. You see, this whole thing is based upon seeing, becoming more conscious. So if we're willing to see where it is we're not willing to relax, then we're going to move beyond that boundary, that barrier. But you got to be willing to see it. Instead of just skipping like a stone into the air and saying, okay, well, that didn't work. Let me try something else here that'll get me feeling better, because I would like to feel, I want pleasure. Okay, so I can find that in the mind. Oh, boy, you're not kidding. Yeah, so I'll just keep that coming. All the tricks. complexity, simple. Proximity, that's another one. Oh, I've got so much, you know, my life is too, this thing's too far away. It's not far away. How far away is now? So if you're going to make it far away, then you just put yourself out of the present moment. Because that's the only indicator. That's the only direction. So how far away is now? When you're in the car driving and somebody, and you're lost in all the reaction, how far away is now? Or you could ask this, how would love move me now? How would love move now? Because love can only arise present moment. Proximity. Proximity and ease. Ease. Simplicity. It has to be the simplest thing because it's the nature of reality. How deeply buried could reality be? It's only deeply buried because we perceive what we want to perceive rather than the way it is. And how do we change those perceptions is we have to look at them and see whether we're getting out of life what we wanted, which obscured those perceptions to begin with. See, it's all very, it's clear. Okay, I'm seeing two. Well, if you're seeing two, then you're seeing through desire and self-defensiveness. Keeping yourself tucked in while you opinionate externally. That's why you see two. That's why. So if I don't want to see two, I have to look at my opinions. I have to look at the way I organize life to maintain those opinions. It's just looking. It's just seeing. I'm not going to hide from anything. I'm not going to hide from anything. That's really scary. And that's why it seems to take so long, is that I'm not finished with my hiding. I'm not going to hide from anything. I'm going to face the difficult. Why have I been so noisy? It's because of my resistance to the difficult. My excusing myself away from the difficult. My opinionation of the difficult. All the reasons I bring up as to why I can't see the difficult or why I shouldn't see the difficult or on and on. Now, it does get difficult only because of our objections to seeing. Because we think, what if I look, this will say something about me that will just blow me away, blow me off the earth, kill me. That's not too... I can't face that. I'll face everything else, but I can't face that. So timing, that's why I say stay within yourself. If you feel like you can't, and don't forget it's there. Just say, okay, it's there waiting for another time. It's just not, I don't want to go there right now. I don't feel ready for it. And then there will be a time when you'll want to see it. And that's staying within yourself. Because if you rush it, if you think you should, which is rushing it, then it blows away your defense mechanisms and you may not be prepared to be able to hold yourself steady enough with your defense mechanisms just gone. But if you just, okay, truth is my defense mechanism. I just want to know what's true. And you just keep moving, inching our way along, seeing what is relevantly there in front of us and asking questions, because the other component of all this is questioning where you get a sense. All of us have a sense of what we're not willing to look at. And at times you can question your way into what you're not willing to look at. because you feel prepared to handle what's on the other side. And your heart will be an indicator of that. I'm ready for this. I don't care. I don't care. I don't care. And then you do. Let me give you an affirmation here. It feels like there's terror on the other end. In actuality, there's nothing. So you have to prove that terror is nothing. Doesn't it sound like a fun job? Oh man, I can't wait. Okay, I said, thank you all. Come into the silence with me. It's not scary. You can go out. You can go out again. You can make yourself noisy, but just relish. You see, I mean, so much of the reason that we don't stay within the silence is that we don't feel safe, but safety's here. Safety, look to your left and right, that's safety. There's nobody here that's not safe. And so we can be safe, we can feel safe, the environment's safe. I won't lead you beyond your means to cope as long as you stay within yourself. I've made that mistake in my teaching to encourage people faster than they're willing to go in their own maturity. I won't do that again. So when we feel ready, it's there. Okay, I'll see, how many of you are new or relatively new and need some instructions on walking meditation? Anyone? Okay, so those people who just held up their hand will meet with Ellen. Ellen, where are you? Oh, there you are. She is going to be doing Qigong, a movement exercise after lunch, which is for everybody, whether you've ever done it before or not. It's just simple movement, conscious movement. And she will also teach those of you who raised your hand, maybe in the corner down there, the walking practice. And if you'd like to have some additional instructions on walking, then please go there as soon as this is over, this session. So we're going to do a lot of things. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do because I don't want to map it out. It feels too... So we're going to do some, maybe, guided meditations, some dyads. All of this will be explained. You don't have to know what they are ahead of time. Some guided meditations, some dyads, questions and answers, some talks like this, some periods of quietude, believe it or not, walking. We have a very full day, and I encourage you to come tomorrow too, because it builds on itself. It builds on itself. And often people, there's something missing if the whole of the weekend isn't lived. So make your, I know football, there's a competing interest tomorrow, and we have some kind of march for Women's March. Not some kind of, but Women's March that's very appealing today. But there's also this, and if this isn't... You see, maturity... Maturity is the willingness, the wanting, the inward drive, the wanting to use your life for spiritual development, your entire life, for the rest of your life. If you've reached that conclusion that this isn't some thing you're doing for a while, meditation, I tried meditation, it didn't. No. If it's something that is a guiding force for the rest of your life, and you know it, when it lands in you, you know it, that's spiritual maturity. And that's what I'm oriented to, the spiritually mature. That's where my talks come from. That's where everything comes from. If you're not, then sit and listen as best you can. Keep reaffirming your place, because this could get confusing, which it probably already has. And you're also welcome to come, but I'm not going to push you beyond your willingness to come, your willingness to engage in what I'm saying. Okay, so we're going to do a walking. You're welcome to walk outdoors because it doesn't seem like it's raining. And we're going to, it's 10 o'clock, we'll walk to 10:30. If somebody could ring the bell at 10:25, and I don't even know what the bell looks like. Do we have a bell? Back at the, yep. Do I have a volunteer? Okay, so can I get a volunteer to ring the bell? Okay, Susan. Susan, when you want to handle that all day?
Sure.
Okay, you'll be the bell ringer. It's just easier, right? So when you hear the bell, it means you have 5 minutes to come back in, and I'm not sure what we'll do. Oh, we'll have a guided meditation. Sound like fun? Okay, y'all. We're in silence today, so, you know, for logistics and things and books, you're welcome to talk quietly to find out all that. Where's the bathroom if you don't know it, all that. But to each other, let's just be quiet. Let's just hold that. That's itself is a communication. Okay, good. All right.